second seating right here next to Bishop Coyne. Oh gosh, okay, there we go. All right, good, good, rock and roll. We'll set my stopwatch. Hey, thank you everybody for coming. We'll go ahead and begin just in the interest of time with the press conference. So I will introduce Bishop Coyne, chair on the Committee of Communications, Bishop Coyne from Burlington, Vermont. Bishop.
Thank you, Judy. For the panel, this opportunity for a discussion with the press today, we have two members of the USCCB who had presentations this morning, one of whom will have, and the other who will have a presentation this afternoon. Archbishop Wilton Gregory of the Archdiocese of Atlanta is here to speak as the chair of the Committee on Divine Worship to the discussion regarding the rite of infant baptism. Bishop Richard Malone of the Diocese of Buffalo is here as a member of the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth. He made a very good presentation, and we had a very lively discussion on Amoris Laetitiae and the efforts of the conference to increase the support and promotion of marriage and family life. And immediately to my left is Archbishop Thomas Wenske, who is a member of the Bishop's Working Group on the Life and Dignity of the Human Person, as well as somebody who was very much involved in the convocation of Catholic leaders gathering in July down in Orlando, so he can speak to both of those matters as well. So I'd like to open it up now to Judy and any questions that you may have.
Yes, so if you have a question, please raise your hand and approach the center mic. I'll call upon you. Any questions? Yes.
Hello, I'm Heidi Schlumpf from National Catholic Reporter, and this question is for you, Archbishop Gregory. In light of the vote on the baptism translation, I was wondering, because the motu proprio didn't come in time for that translation, at what point do you think Catholics in the pews will see some difference in liturgical translations in light of that document from the Vatican?
Heidi, first of all, I think that the reason that we decided to go forward with the text for the baptism of children was that it had already been reviewed twice by the bishops. It was well underway, and there were very few changes from the prior text, and so we felt it could stand on its own. I would hope that given the issuance of the motu proprio, the ISIL and the constitutive members of ISIL, the English-speaking Episcopal conferences, would be able to take this new authorization, this new permission, into consideration as they translate things going forward. There are a number of projects that are underway, including the very large project of the Liturgy of the Hours, but eventually the other liturgical books that have been reissued will be submitted for retranslation. How long? I don't know exactly how long, but it does provide a new moment in the process of translations, and it gives Episcopal conferences new authorization to be more actively engaged in that process.
Okay, any other questions? Yes.
Question on the marriage presentation and Amoris Laetitiae, in an attempt to clear up some of the apparently unwanted media attention on the Amoris Laetitiae, does Amoris Laetitiae permit Catholics living in adultery to receive communion?
That's not an answer I'm going to provide for you. The whole point of my presence here and the presence earlier in the assembly room there was to advance the pastoral plan on marriage, the hope of which is to help people enter into and live happier, holier, healthier, deeper marriages and to form consciences about what marriage is. So hopefully going forward, we'll have, this is a hope and a prayer and a goal, we'll have fewer broken marriages and divorces. It's not in my provenance to respond to that question right here.
Okay, Yes, it's the back.
Thank you. My name is Chris Karstens. I'm from the Adoremus Bulletin. Archbishop Gregory, this is a question about the motu proprio and Liturgiam Authenticam. Is it true that the motu proprio only changes the process of, I guess, the confirmatio, but are the principles of Liturgiam Authenticam, will they still be in force moving forward for the other liturgical books?
In the response that Pope Francis gave to Cardinal Seurat, there is reference to the openness or the possibility or the need to look at the sections of Liturgiam Authenticam, but they have to be worked out. The actual document is in effect, but what modifications might be forthcoming is still an open question.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Other questions? That's it. Okay. Okay, one more.
One for Archbishop Gregory. On baptism, the differences that require the recognitio, the both forms of approval from the Vatican, are those differences mostly related to the exorcism part of the baptism?
No, they're mostly related to the fact that there is, at the end, as an appendix, there is a proposed schema for celebrating baptism within Mass.
I see.
And so that's primarily the area that would be considered adaptations.
The overlap with the Mass.
Within the Mass, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, Dennis.
Dennis Sadowski, Catholic News Service. I'm just wondering, because we're still only 4 months away from the convocation, just wondering, there hasn't been anything on the agenda, this public agenda, about discussion of results from the convocation. I'm just wondering if there's anything that's going to be coming about that, what have you. That's all.
Yeah, that's the topic for this afternoon after lunch. And I'm in a kind of a difficult situation because I'm supposed to speak about the convocation before we had our discussion. But I think I anticipate that it'll be a very positive discussion because the experience of the convocation was very life-giving, and the numbers that attended it, a significant number of bishops, and over 150, I think, bishops were there, and leaders from throughout the United States, Catholic lay leaders and religious priests. I think it was a very uplifting experience, a shot in the arm. And I've already heard of various dioceses taking it back to their diocese and replicating or seeking to replicate it. In my own diocese, I had something planned along that area in the first week or so of September, but it had to be canceled because of Hurricane Irma. So now I have to reschedule it and see how we gather I had almost 40 people attending the convocation and meeting with them and unpacking and then see how we can roll out something similar in the diocese and keep the momentum going.
It's embargoed.
You don't have it yet.
Tune in. It'll be there. I'll be one of three presenters, and so I think just stay tuned, and it'll be, I think, a positive presentation. And really, we're going to be open to hearing remarks from the floor, and that's really what's going to be the interesting part, because we've been well scripted to what we're going to say, but we'll see what the audience says.
Okay, Father Reese.
Archbishop Winsky, Tom Reese from Religion News Service. Archbishop Winsky, you have a lot of Haitians in Miami, and I wonder if you could tell us about what you're hearing from them, about their concerns, and how the church is responding to their concerns about their change in status.
Well, the Haitians, before I was a bishop, I spent 18 years of my priesthood working as their parish priest. So I'm very close to the Haitian community. And it's a large community. It's probably over 250,000 people in South Florida. probably a million throughout the United States that are living here. The there's a subgroup of them, about 50,000, that were granted temporary protective status after the earthquake on January 2010. And they join groups of Salvadorians and Hondurans. There are more Hondurans that have had TPS for almost 20 years. And each of these groups are seeing the present administration announcing plans to bring TPS to an end. Now, among the Haitians, this has caused in past months some panic. In fact, it caused a little bit of a panic on the Canadian border, where about 3,000 to 4,000 Haitians attempted to enter Canada because of rumors going around that they would be better received in Canada than they were in the United States, which is not totally clear that they would be. Right now, there are Haitians in detention that are not covered by TPS, maybe 3,000 to 4,000 that had left Haiti a couple years ago to seek to build lives in Brazil. And when the Brazilian economy tanked along with its politics, those Haitians started heading towards Mexico and through Mexico attempting an entry into the United States. And many of them have been picked up and are presently detained. This, you know, Haiti has a dramatic situation of extreme poverty, political instability, and so you know, the to bring to TPS to an end would rob these people of a possible future here in the United States, because there is no real future in Haiti. Haiti depends on its diaspora to support relatives in Haiti. Most of these TPS people are working, and so they're sending help back home, and they're paying taxes here. So to pull the plank out from underneath them would be very deleterious to them and to Haiti and to their families here. There are, after 7 years in the United States, and some of them had been here before that when they were able to secure the TPS status, but you can imagine after 7 years, many of them have children that are American citizens, and this would imply a tremendous disruption to their lives. And after 7 years, you don't have anything to go back to. You know, there's nobody, you know, no place to go back to. So there's been, it was announced yesterday on the floor that a group of Congress people from South Florida have introduced legislation to grant a legislative remedy to the Haitians. I think today in the paper there was another group of legislators from congressmen from New York that have introduced a similar bill. And really that's the solution, because the critics of TPS would say, you know, it's not temporary. And I remember a few months ago I was meeting with somebody from the administration, that's what they threw at me. Well, it's not temporary. And I said, yeah, it's not. After 7, 8 years, after 10, 20 years, it's not temporary. And so, we need another remedy that's not as draconian as you're suggesting to send people back to, because, you know, the old philosophical principle, you know, you never step in the same river twice. So, you know, these people that left Honduras or Salvador 20 years ago, that have left Haiti almost 10 years ago, they moved on, and they become Americans, you know. So we have to make them American in fact as well.
Okay, I think we've got time for one more question. Going once, going twice. Okay, a note, the afternoon session may end early. So just know that after the session ends, no matter what time it is, we will have a press conference in this room about approximately 15 minutes after. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for coming. Thank you, Your Excellencies. Thank you.
Thank you.